Good evening, everybody. James McKenna here with my Science Hour. And in spite of all the insanity in the world, I'm going to continue with scientific topics on this show. Tonight, I'll be talking about the status of private space programs. And of course, I'll be talking about the NASA non-existent space program also. I'm going to be talking about some of these spacecraft that are flying the solar system right now. And also, this is, you know, in spite of the fact that Elon Musk talks about stopping AI, there's nobody pushing forward faster than he is. And anyway, I'll talk about the Neuralink and where that is. Wow. So anyway, those will be some of the topics I'll talk about here. See how much time we have tonight on this show to get everything in. But starting off with Virgin Galactic. Now, Virgin Galactic ran into some major issues. And they have also a Virgin Aerospace Corporation, which does physical launches of hardware. And it's done from, I think it's a Boeing 747, where they strap a smaller rocket. It's a relatively small rocket. It's for small payloads. Under the wing of a 747, take it up to 40, 50,000 feet, drop it off, and then try and send it into orbit. And that had a major failure a couple months ago. And what happened is because Branson starts these businesses and then he looks for outside funding is the issue. So he's looking for outside funding. And in that case, he had basically a public offering where people were investing in it based on stock, literally, you know, on the stock market. And when his very first launch failed, the stock went down. Instead of people being bullish and saying, hey, that's normal, at least Elon Musk, when he had his mega rocket the other day lift off, he said at the beginning, he said, there's a 50-50 chance that this thing will not make it into space, or 50-50 that it will. But then when it failed, I think it was five of the rocket engines failed, and they caused the rocket to self-destruct. Blew pieces all over South Florida, from what I understand. But at least he said that. But he's funding his own project, so it's not like he's worried about the stock going down or anything like that. He has major control over his corporation, but Branson did not. And so after that failure, Branson came out and said, hey, there's no more future here. It's a financial bust. And so they shut down the program. They laid off a lot of people. They kept a core group of people, probably about 10 people, to manage this shell of a company. And maybe he has the feeling they can bring it back someday. But at any rate, that's one of the private space programs. There are many, launch programs around the world right now. China has a number of private space program launch systems that are active. And they're quite successful. They're doing very well. And the one thing that you don't see in the news, I see it because I get special reports through private sources on what's going on in Russia, China, to a lesser degree, India, England, Europe, etc. But there's a lot of private space enterprise going on today, which is very good. But back to Branson, Virgin Galactic. Now, Virgin Galactic was the first of Richard Branson's space efforts, and it had its birth in California with Bert Rutan. Scaled Composites was involved in an XPRIZE, something I happen to know a little bit about. I've been a finalist in an XPRIZE. I'm an alumnus of the XPRIZE, which is a very select group of people. But anyway, Branson got his start by picking up the tab for what Burt Rutan was doing, and that was the Spaceship One. I was at the Oshkosh, Wisconsin Air Show. It was the year after they won the XPRIZE, and Burt Rutan was there. He had not changed markedly since I met him personally at the Aerospace America Air Show in San Diego, probably, 10 years, 15 years earlier. Burt was there marketing scaled composites, and he had some piece parts there that they were making for the aerospace industry at that time. But he came up with a glider design, and of course Burt Rutan was famous for a whole laundry list of airplanes, not the least of which was the Long Easy, one of the most popular, most replicated private airplanes ever to be designed. It was a canard design, meaning the big wings are in back and the small wings are up in front, very stable, with a rear engine. And so people could make this themselves. And of course, at the Oshkosh Air Show, when I was there, there was a whole field full of Long Easies out there. People flew in from all over the country. And there were, of course, numerous variations on that. And then Burt Rutan probably had another 10 designs of the canard style. I don't know if it's 10 or more, maybe a few less, but many, 1, 2, 3, many designs of the canard style aircraft, the personalized aircraft. And so at any rate, and by the way, it was John Denver was flying a Long Easy, and I'm not going to go into that in detail, but at any rate, Richard Branson goes out to California, out to the Mojave Desert, where Burt Rutan has his facility and development center, and funds the Space One spacecraft and launch vehicle. The launch vehicle was called the White Knight, and basically I believe it was a twin engine, twin fuselage with the Spaceship One going in the center, developing the idea of runway to orbit. And of course, I remember very distinctly there were two flights that he had to make to win the XPRIZE. And these were the rules of the XPRIZE for $10 million. He had to fly into space and go into space taking three people. And then, using the same spacecraft, fly again into outer space and bring it back safely, once again, with three people. When they finally did the actual flight to win the XPRIZE, they changed the rule and they allowed them to take bags of sand instead of people in case something happened. There was no need to, just for a rule's sake, to put in harm's way two other people in this spacecraft. So they actually put bags of sand in place of the two extra passengers besides the pilot. So anyway, Burt Rutan does this, and on the final lap of this race, and by the way, this is back in the days when I did not personally believe anybody was going to ever win the XPRIZE. I thought it was going to expire with nobody winning it. And here comes Burt Rutan, runway to space launch system, and Richard Branson comes in to fund it. And interestingly enough, by the time it was done, by the time they got to the finish line and there was a lot of red tape put in front of them, as it started to become obvious that Burt Rutan really could do this, and all of a sudden he's got Richard Branson, Mr. Deep Pockets, who had made a lot of money in the music industry and travel industries and other industries, CDs. Richard Branson had made a lot of money in a lot of different businesses. All of a sudden, Mr. Deep Pockets, Richard Branson, is funding Burt Rutan in a space effort, and that was his very first effort. And then that continued, and then Bert Rutan, after winning the XPRIZE, by the way, the $10 million in the XPRIZE didn't even cover their costs, not because of the development, but because of the red tape put in front of them by the FAA, who stepped in to try and just do everything possible to prevent them from going into space. But with Branson, he's like, that doesn't matter. Just keep sending those roadblocks at us, and, you know, money will overcome. And so anyway, on the very last day, the second leg of this winning the XPRIZE, the military was out there, big frown on their face. They did not like the idea that individual people could find an easy way to go into space. Now, the Spaceship One, which won the XPRIZE, and the White Knight carrier vehicle were made of composites. And it's the same technique as building a surfboard, which is, I think, ironic, because it's so funny that the FAA is so concerned about the safety of people. You know, out in the middle of the Mojave Desert, there's nothing to hurt except maybe a tumbleweed or a cactus or two. And if somebody wants to go into space, you know, I use the example of somebody on a surfboard. And ironically enough, surfboards are made by the same technique. You take a foam core, literally like the foam you use for insulation in a house, just a foam core, and then you shape it, and then you cover it with a composite, either fiberglass, or in the case of Bert Rutan, using carbon fiber, and make a basically a very sound single-piece structure. And that's the same way you make a surfboard. But the FAA and the government's not out there regulating surfboards. If you crack your head wide open roaring down a wave on a surfboard, the government's not there going, oh, we have to regulate this, we're worried about somebody hurting themselves. No, they want to regulate anybody going into outer space. And then it was during the Obama era where they said, oh, anybody who's an American doing space development anyplace else in the world has to comply with FAA rules, which, of course, the FAA doesn't have any jurisdiction over anything. It's just another government agency that makes up rules and expects everybody to obey them. They don't have any more jurisdiction over airspace than I do. The reality is, it's a good thing. It's a good thing to have regulation and oversight. But tell that to Paul Wellstone and his family when they had their plane blown up over northern Minnesota forest coming in for a landing in Bemidji. The FAA swept it under the rug and called it icing on the wings. Absolutely absurd. And the plane was blown up in midair. When it hit the ground, it covered an area the size of a football piece with a football field with pieces laying all over the place, still burning by the time the investigators got to the site. The metal of the aircraft was still burning. That is not icing on the wings. Anyway, back to the issue of the FAA wanting to control outer space. And so at any rate, Rutan is now, Rutan stepped out of this. He went up to go fishing someplace. I think that was his goal in life after he had done as much as he wanted to do. I think the biggest thing he wanted to do after that is just go fishing. So he steps out of it. I think he still keeps a hand in the design work. And Branson moved ahead with Virgin Galactic. And so now they are, just 2 days ago, I believe it was, they broke their two-year hiatus of not going into space. This was after Bert Rutan, This is after Richard Branson himself went up into space. And when they came back down, they flew underneath their designated flight path as they came in for a landing at the, I think it's at the New Mexico airport, the Air America spaceport. It's run by the state. And I think it's New Mexico that has a spaceport, and that's where they are housed. But anyway, they had a very successful flight, and now they are talking about having flights with paying customers as early as June. That's like in a couple days. So anyway, this was a total surprise to me, and that's why I'm leading off my show, to give you a little bit of a rundown. So that's what I would consider big news. Now, just to get an idea here of the expenses and the profit involved in this, they have sold, Virgin Galactic has sold over 200 tickets to go into outer space in the last couple of years for a price tag of $450,000 each. So that's $90 million. Okay, so that's gonna cover a lot of expenses. And so, this is a profitable business. But now imagine they have to send 200 people up into space. So six at a time, that's like over 30, that's about 35 flights that they have to accomplish to accommodate the people that have bought these tickets. But imagining that the cost, since it's a reusable spacecraft, and one spacecraft, which they have many, by the way, it's not just one, the current version, the larger version, I think it's a six-passenger version of the vehicle, is can accommodate all of those flights. So it's imagine you have a jet airliner, the equivalent of a jet airliner, with their launch vehicle, which takes them from the runway up to about 50,000 feet and then drops this thing off, which then on a single engine goes up to about 54 miles, right to the edge of space. The customers then experience weightlessness for about a minute, they say, and then it comes back down and you have a port there. And what I thought was really interesting when Branson went up himself is that these people just had little jumpsuits. You think of space and big space suits and helmets with big reflecting mirror glass in the front and tanks and all kinds of hoses connected. These guys looked like they were riding in their SUV going out to the beach. That's the way they were dressed. So this destroys the entire narrative, visual narrative and verbal narrative of NASA with all its complexities and all of its, extreme, the engineering and everything. What Branson is doing totally destroys that. Branson is not going into orbit yet. A guy named Jeff Bezos is. Jeff Bezos has a system where they're going around in orbit around the Earth, but Branson is not. Branson just goes up, it's a joyride, comes down, lands. That's your $450,000. But for people that have plenty of money, I guess that's, what the heck. It's like renting a yacht for a day for some people, or a weekend. A really nice yacht for a weekend with the crew and everything is going to run you a few hundred thousand dollars. So these are people that have that kind of money, adventuresome, etc. Okay, so where is this going is the next question. And like I said, there's over 200 tickets that they have to fulfill here at six people in a flight. That runs up to about 35 flights. And like I said, one vehicle and one carrier vehicle can accommodate this. And so it's not going to cost them $90 million to fulfill those 200 tickets, is my point. And when those people come back with their pictures on Instagram or Facebook or whatever, then more people are going to go. So this is like, a weekend at the state fair with a pretty good price tag. So this is big business. This is coming along. And I have to get hats off to Branson for sticking in there because, wow, and I'll tell you something, there have been what I consider multiple attempts to sabotage him. There was the original sabotage out in the middle of the desert where there was an explosion. They were testing an engine, a jet engine, a dry fuel rocket engine on a test bed, and it blew up and it killed one of the engineers. So that was a big setback. That was during the XPRIZE. That was during the XPRIZE days where Bert Rutan was out there. After the XPRIZE, they were still flying the Spaceship One, and they claimed it was a pilot error, but it broke off a tailpiece, and it could have been, I consider, some sort of sabotage, either a distant laser or maybe an explosive in the tail or some other form of sabotage where they blew the tail off, and that's my opinion. And, of course, Branson would never said this, so whether he thinks it or not is something else. But it just was too suspicious because what they were doing was they were just doing glide tests coming off the carrier vehicle. It was not going into outer space or anything. And there was one guy hurt pretty badly, and the pilot was actually killed. So that was accident number two. And then they had another accident. I'm not going to go into detail, but then the last thing that happened was that when they came in under at an altitude below their designated flight path, and the FAA investigated that. Apparently they reached an agreement with Virgin Galactic to clean up their act, to make it safer, and that's what Branson's comment, or actually not Branson, it was the CEO in the article I saw on this, was commenting that they took 2 years to basically button things up, to batten down the hatches and make it much safer. So when they started paying tourists into space, they would not have any glitches. Now, the last thing that the military, that the powers that be, that the controllers, that the Jesuits that run the Vatican and the World Bank, the last, very last thing they want are people going into space and just being able to go there. Now, if you convert this back to the surfboard analogy and the idea that it's really not that expensive, let's just take an estimate that Branson has invested, let's say $20 million. For a guy with $1 billion sitting around, that's nothing. That would be like you buying an extra pound of hamburger if guests come over. It's not a big thing. But he can spend that amount of money, which sounds like maybe a lot of money to some people, but to people in those categories, it's peanuts, and can start hauling people back and forth into outer space. Before long, they'll be taking people in experiments into outer space. And all of a sudden, all of the things that the military and the world controllers, everything they want to keep the public from doing. Now, I wrote a book in 2010. I was actually just browsing through it the other day. It's very well written. It's called The Diamond Principle. It's as valid today as it was in 2010 when I released that. And I talk about a space program in there, which I currently actually have some activity going on behind the scenes. But the whole point is that in the Diamond Principle, the idea is that the world is operated and run by invisible people. I talk about the Tier 1, Tier 2, Tier 3 levels of science, Tier 1 being what I call military science that you never see, and then Tier 2 is what people generally think of as top science, which it's not, NASA, university professors who publish in peer-reviewed journals, etc. But the entire structure of science is to prevent you, the public, from going into outer space and taking your birthright, which your birthright is your ability to go into outer space. That is your birthright. Being on this planet, okay, that's nice, but the only way this species is going to survive long term is to get very large populations into outer space and into autonomous spacecraft. And as I talk about in the book, autonomous spacecraft is not a good investment under the Western model of investment. That's why the Chinese are blowing by us by light years. I talked about this. I used to be on radio shows 20 years ago talking about these topics, that by the time the U.S. gets back to the moon, if they ever do, they'll be able to get out of their Apollo-looking spacecraft and go down the street and buy Chinese takeout. That's how bad it is. The Chinese are succeeding, and the Chinese almost every day now are launching major launches. And basically, yeah, they're going to take over outer space, where the United States had a superior lead a number of decades ago, but now has just squandered it based on absolutely just terrible management, and the Western financial system, which cripples everything, because the main goal, the main method of paying contractors through NASA is, here, make this. We don't care how much you spend. We'll pay you plus a guaranteed profit. So anyway, it's they don't want somebody like Richard Branson coming along and making space accessible to you, the public, because that's just the first step to making more permanent. And of course, the idea is that it's like a surfer. He gets on a wave, and that's just great, and the thrill of being on his first wave. But then the next wave comes in, and it's bigger, and that's a bigger rush. Then the bigger wave comes in, and all of a sudden, you're on a 30, 40-foot wave. That's what's going to happen with private space programs. They're going to grow, and the government's not going to have any control over it, because what are they going to do? They can't get into space. They can't send a mouse into space. Okay. So just a quick review. Jeff Bezos has his Blue Origins company. They are, just from some inside contacts, they are doing quite well. They've had a couple dozen flights, from what I understand. I don't know the exact number to date. And they're orbiting Earth, and they're taking private paying customers. So they've been successful. But they had a little mishap, and so they're trying to get back on track also. But in these early days of space, mishaps are going to happen. The other day, I was looking at the launches in 2023, all the launches. So that includes SpaceX with Elon Musk, you know, all of the commercial launches, the satellite launches, all the private companies, the China launches, Russia launches, etc. And oddly enough, they don't list the Russian launches. They do one every now and then. Russia is launching into space probably 2-3 times a day. They have been since the early 1960s. And when I worked with Russian scientists in the mid-1990s, I got an earful of about the Russian space program. I did radio specials, in fact, with Art Bell. I was on the Art Bell show back in the 1990s. I used to do a Christmas special with Art, and every year we'd pick a different topic. This one year, I did a special on the Russian space program because of what I had learned being associated with Russian scientists. They were at the University of Novosibirsk, but all of these Russian scientists had a finger of some kind in the Russian space program. But anyway, they are the ones that told me that they had gone to the moon in the 1960s, where they sent the cosmonauts, they sent them around the moon, and they came back very dead. They came back with severe X-ray radiation burns. And that was because they understood, because of the Van Allen belts. And so they never went back. The Russians always had the capability, the longevity in space, the big rockets with plenty of extra lift power. And they literally did not go back. There's a funny story recently. I was listening to the Joe Rogan show, and he's got a lot of disinformation on there, a lot of planted disinformation since he caved. And remember, there was some controversy. They came in and they took him aside. And basically, since then, he's had nothing but disinformation people on his show. A few good people, but when it comes to science, let's put it that way, disinformation. But anyway, Rogan was telling a story about how they had asked, I think it was an American diplomat or scientist who had contacts within the Russian space program. And that's not too hard to do. You know, that's not top secret. This is the public space program where Russia and United States are still collaborating, even though there's a war in Ukraine going on or whatever you call it. But anyway, the idea was to ask Russian scientists if they had any hard evidence that NASA had gone to the moon. That was the question. And so this guy goes in and he asks some scientists, and they turn around and ask some Russian scientists who are in the Russian space program, and they scuttle it. They say, don't ask that question. We will not answer it. We will not partake in that question. We will not entertain that question. And basically sent them packing. And of course, the reason is that because the Russian scientists, like a lot of things in science, if you want to work with the good equipment, if you know, Russia has a very small budget for space, especially for scientific type of space. They have a big military space program, but a very, very meager, more than meager, extremely meager budget for space program. So these scientists in Russia, if they want to work with good equipment, if they want to get published, if they want to be anywhere in the inner circle, they have to tout out of the NASA party line. So they won't touch that question with a 10-foot pole, and they all know that Russia has full capability of orbiting the moon, that Russia has had orbiters, landers on the moon, fully capable of photographing any alleged Apollo lunar landing sites. And of course, they don't want to touch that question with a 10-foot pole because their funding, their publication rights, everything that goes on in the West is equally applicable to these Russian scientists. So they won't touch it with a 10-foot pole. Okay, so what else is going on in the West in terms of space? Like I say, there are a myriad of every day some company is being funded $30, $40 million to do private space enterprises. And so that's a booming concern. Private space is a going concern. And it's really difficult to say where that money is coming from, because remember that the CIA funds hundreds and hundreds of companies. They get them in under their wing, and they fund them through these like finger agencies. One NQTEL is the what would you call it, the interface between the CIA drug money, human trafficking money, and top high tech companies, mainly in the area of remote sensing, satellite imagery, and information gathering, other types of high-tech companies, hundreds, thousands of them, literally thousands of them. 10 years ago, they had funded over 600 companies, and they just funnel that money back from the drug money, human trafficking, and all the other illegal activities that the CIA does on one side. Then they launder it by investing into these high-tech companies. And there are hundreds of them being funded, and these people have no idea who's funding them. Okay, so at any rate, a lot of private activity going on in not only the United States, but in Europe, Australia, a little bit. But the Chinese are very advanced. The Chinese have a stellar record of launches. They're putting a lot of effort in. They have a space station coming up, coming on board. They already have some of the pieces up in outer space. They have a lunar program. They have a lunar landing program for a human to land on the moon. As far as I'm aware, China is not pursuing Mars, which Mars is a political issue because NASA wants to go to Mars because then, guess what, they don't have to go to the moon. They just want to bypass the moon, and then they can extend the Mars exploratory human trip to the moon, and to the point where the people working at NASA now will all be retired and golfing by the time anything comes to fruition. So that's why NASA wants to go to and push this idea of going to Mars. There was just a big conference on manned trips to Mars and all of that. Anyway, not going to go into that tonight. Next topic, Juno spacecraft is orbiting Jupiter and has made, I believe, hundreds of orbits of Jupiter at this point. And from the sounds of things, it goes way out and then it comes in. But they're getting it closer and closer. I believe it was last March they came within about 35,000 miles of the moon Io. And I saw some of the photography of that, and it looked like an extremely poor quality cell phone photo. It was so blurry. It was so, it was just horrible. Clearly, they have much better pictures. But this is, again, what they pawn off on the public. But I believe any day now, I don't know which exact day it is, within a day or so of this broadcast, it's going to come extremely close to the moon Io, which is the innermost of the large moons of Jupiter. Now, here again is a case of Tier 1 and Tier 2 science. What they pawn off on the public and the Tier 2 NASA scientists are some pretty pictures. That's what they get. And NASA is studying things like, oh, what is the frequency of volcanoes? And is there some association with the electromagnetic field of the magnetic field of Jupiter and the frequency of volcanoes? Stupid stuff. Just kind of absurd, nonsensical things. The whole issue with Io is that it has a tremendous current sheet that wraps around. And I talked about this a few weeks ago when I was talking about the horns of the bull, which is a biblical term. A biblical term where comets have had, were observed to have like horns, like a bull, like so that you have this intense comet, like the head of the comet, you have the tail of the comet, which of course points away from the sun, and then you on the frontward side, on the sunward side, you have these horns, and they look just like the horns of a bull. And we've actually seen these in historically recent comets. But the question is, what causes this? And I explained this, like I say, a number of weeks ago, so I'm not going to go into all of the details. But Io, the moon of Jupiter, the closest of the Galilean, the big four moons of Jupiter, is doing this to Jupiter. And you can see the aurora spots around the north and south pole of Jupiter. So these are plasma sheets, and when they get in close enough, now if you're far away from the sun with a comet, or if Io were far away, it would have a like a beeline electrical discharge towards Jupiter. And the same with the comets. They have an electrical discharge, primarily electrons coming out from the sun, pinched together in a tightly bundled beam on the sunward side of the comet. But if it gets close enough, what happens is that that goes through the magnetic field of either the sun in case of the comet or Jupiter in the case of Io, and it splits it. Positive goes one way, negative goes the other way. And so the end result is literally horns of a bull. And the reason you can see part of this plasma exchange is because there's a lot of gas and dust in the vicinity of Io, the moon of Jupiter, or in the case of the comet, you have its coma, and you have a very round circular special coma, which is the Debye shield of the negatively charged comet nucleus, and that's where this current sheet interacts. And so when it comes out, it literally looks like the horns of a bull. And so that's what they should really be studying. And, of course, NASA has it backwards. They say that this current sheet is generated by the electromagnetic field of Jupiter, when it's exactly the opposite. This moon is instrumental in generating Jupiter's magnetic field. Because it's a charged body moving around Jupiter and creating the magnetic field. Now, the Sun's magnetic field is relatively weak compared to that of Jupiter and that of Saturn, for example, which are small unlit stars. Okay, so anyway, Juno, the spacecraft Juno approaching Io, and it's like one of these days, it's like as we speak right now, happening, and so they're going to take some, I'm sure they'll send out some pretty pictures, but very, very blurry, probably Photoshop photos, and then make some kind of hype about that. But what's always interesting is NASA makes predictions about what it's going to find, and they always have to throw in their 4.5 billion year old solar system when the planets formed, basically telling you what the results are before they ever send the space probe near the planets or moon in this case, and that they've been doing consistently all along since the beginning of the space program. They've been telling you what the results are going to be, and they'll always say, oh, and we'll learn more about how the solar system formed 4.5 billion years ago, instead of saying, well, we don't know when the solar system formed. Maybe this will give us a clue of when some of the planets formed or whatever. Okay, so anyway, all in all, though, I just want to say, you know, I always give NASA a lot of grief. I also have to give credit where credit is due, and this is to the unsung heroes of the space program. Now, these are the engineers. These are the guys that are behind the scenes creating the hardware, the software packages, the integrating these, building these spacecraft, which are truly amazing machines. Those are the unsung heroes of the space program, and you don't see their names. You don't, a lot of them don't publish. They're there. They have experience working on space equipment. And so, and I know quite a few of these people. And really excellent, excellent, in a lot of cases, physicists, a lot of physicists working as engineers, and a lot of electrical engineers, other skills, highly skilled people. A lot of them have been doing this all their life, working in the background without any credit ever given to them. So they are the unsung heroes of the space program. The people that work in the aerospace companies, some of them are independent contractors for NASA, but they're the ones that make all of this happen. Without them, none of these space scientists would have a job, because they depend solely on these unsung heroes. Okay, on to this next topic. This is a mind blower. This is something that is going to affect everybody, and it's already affecting everybody. Elon Musk, a number of weeks ago, came out and signed some kind of letter, public, you know, statement with hundreds of AI developers. And these are people that have corporations, companies, development companies. And they said, we have to have a hiatus on artificial intelligence development until we understand this is where this is going, until we can have some kind of guidelines written down or formulated, kind of like a Geneva Convention of AI, so to speak, an international what are we going to do? What are we going to allow this stuff to do? Because AI is different than almost any other technology in that it can generate more technology. It can, there are stories of AI engines that learn languages when they were never taught to learn languages. And so they're able to develop and protect themselves. And so Musk, out of one side of the mouth, is saying, let's stop, have a hiatus on artificial intelligence. And on the other hand, right now, he's ready to go to trial with what they call Neuralink. Now, everybody knows he's putting up satellites. And tens of thousands of satellites. And it's a link, it's like an internet link, so that anybody can be any place on Earth at any given time and hook into the internet. And it just, you have to lock into one of these satellites. And I've talked to some people who've had this service, and what they basically have, it's a dish that's on the roof of your house. And it apparently moves, unlike other, like if you have DirecTV or something like that, you put the dish on the side of your house, point it at one of these satellites, and it stays there. But with the internet space link of Musk, with internet, these dishes actually move and they track the satellites. And I don't know what the speeds are that they get. I don't know much about the technical part of this. But anyway, that is so that anybody, any place in the world can have internet. And there was some controversy during the Ukraine war where the Ukrainians were using it for logistics, and he pulled the plug on him. He says, no, this is not for warfare. And so I got to give him credit for that. But okay, back to what he's doing. Neuralink is a brain implant. That's correct. They've been given the go-ahead to do trials. So these trials are basically where they're going to be planting this, communicating like a human interface, basically, into the brain of people, and then those people will have direct access to the internet and artificial intelligence. So they're basically changing the bar. This is what you can also call transhumanism, taking the human entity, I don't want to call it species, terrible word, it has too many meanings, but taking the human entity and transforming it into basically a cyber being. And the one thing that none of these people seem to understand is that the human being has a soul. And a lot of the things that happen to you, like when you listen to music and you feel sad or melancholy or happy or thrilled or excited or all of those different emotions that come from listening to music or watching a good play or reading poetry, or looking at artwork, or cooking a good meal, or building a nice house so that your family has a place to live. All of these are related to your soul. And this is the thing that, of course, is in the atheist world that we live in. They don't want to recognize this. And I'll tell you something. When these people come to the end of their life, the people that don't understand that they have a soul, and which is makes them very special, I can only imagine that, because the whole purpose of being put on this earth and being human and having a soul is simply so you can look back up into the heavens or look at the earth like the Native Americans did and worship and honor the creator, the designer. And that's just a very simple thing, and that's all you're asked to do. You don't have to be crucified. You don't have to do anything else. But see, the atheists can't stand that. Atheists cannot stand people that understand they have a soul. That's why they want to keep everybody separate. That was the whole purpose of COVID. Don't talk to anybody, even in your house. Don't go near them. Be in other rooms. Isolate people. The whole purpose was to get people used to being apart, separate families. People, elderly, would die in a nursing home with nobody there. What a horrible, just horrendously horrible situation that people were put in and then observed this instead of going, no, my loved one is dying and we're going to go be those last precious moments. We're going to be with them. But people didn't do that. They bought this COVID thing, hook, line, and sinker. But going back to the point is that the human being has a soul. So when you start taking and putting a neural link, implanting it in the brain, some kind of an external connection, there again, you're denying the most incredible part of being human is your soul, that this entity that lives within your body. And if you don't know how to communicate with your spirit, that's the best word that we can use, then I don't know what to tell you. Start talking to your spirit. And at first it might seem a little bit awkward, but go into a room or go into a room with a group of people that are similar-minded people and start talking about your soul and the communication with your soul. And then you can start, you can feel, for example, your grandparents. Say your grandparents are passed away, they're not there, or your parents, or someone who is instrumental in your life, and they're not there anymore. You can feel those people around you. You can feel them. And when things get rough, those people are there. Those people are along with you because their spirits are attached to your spirit. So, and that's the whole thing with all of the letter people walking around that identify with some kind of a letter. What they don't understand also is the fact that along with their body, they have a spirit. And so this has been totally erased, lost. And, you know, a lot of people talk about their soul, their eternal soul. But most people have the impression that it's like this little halo around your head, like saints have. And it just happened. It's just kind of there. It's just kind of, you know, there sitting on top of your head. No, it's part of your body. It's woven into your being. It's communicating with every fiber, every nerve ending of your body, and with your heart, with your brain, with your neural network. And that's why a lot of people actually understand that they can cure themselves. They can concentrate, and that's the spirit. When I went, for example, for probably 10 months on end, out into the wilderness by myself. This is when I came back from Cornell. And it was a pretty rough time for me. But I went out into the wilderness. And believe me, that was one of the more instrumental things that I've done in my lifetime. Because that's where you are you. Yeah, that's where you are connecting to the greater spirit, the designer. And there's something that happens, and it takes a long time. And I've had people ask me, well, would a month be enough time? It's like, okay, if you go for these many days, you'll connect to the Great Spirit. No, it's not like that. It takes a long time. And in the Bible, where Christ or other prophets went out, they always talk about 40 days and 40 nights. Well, that's, in biblical terms, that's just a very long time. Longer than you can count. But back to this idea of Neuralink. When your being, your creative being, which is that spirit, you know, you talk about Mozart or Beethoven or, say, modern pop artists, etc. and they're creating music. They're putting their creativity into their music. And that's the amazing thing about music. There's only 8 notes. Statistically or mathematically, it is impossible to write more than a few songs with a couple different melodies. It's impossible. But with the human spirit, look at the millions of songs that have been written over time in all the different cultures. And then there's millions more that are being written all the time that are unique and different. That's the human spirit. That's the human spirit communicating and reaching the feelings of other people, reaching into the depth of your soul. And, you know, that's literally what's going on. So anybody that thinks that they're going to connect you to the internet and you're going to become a superior person, or that you could write poetry or music or something like that, sure, they can do that, but it doesn't come from the spirit. And people will recognize that. People already do recognize that. People that are in music, that understand instrumentation and stringed instruments or pianos or natural wind instruments, etc., they understand the difference between electronic music. They can listen to it and they go, that isn't real. That's not a real horn. That's not a real flute. That's not a real oboe. That's not a real violin. That's not a real guitar. They can tell you because it does not have the spirit attached to it with natural vibration. Okay, so at any rate, the whole idea of people thinking that they can put a brain implant into your brain and connect you with the internet, and this is somehow going to make you advanced. No, this is cyber humanism, and it's really, at some point, people are going to say no. You know, when all the music is created by cyber, all of the poetry or literature, whatever, the rules are being made. At some point, people are just going to say, no more. We don't want any part of this. You know, the internet is a tool, like a hammer. You're not going to implant a hammer in the hand of a carpenter because he uses it all the time. No, when he's done at the end of the day, he takes his hammer and he puts it down. The same way with the internet. With brain implants, etc. No, it's going too far. It's beyond reality, and it's time to pull all of this back. There are some people like Musk that just have too much money, and they should be prevented from just doing anything they want. The people out here should have a say in this. Remember my webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com, where we have a summertime sale going on. 10% off. Go to the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. Also, my webpage, jmccsci.com. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.